south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
And now, from the crap that goes wrong department, of course, there's crap that goes wrong and crap that goes very wrong. So let's start out today with crap that just sort of pisses you off. But first, a word of advice for all you gonna-bes, wannabes, and expats already living down here. You should never lend Latinos anything. No pots, no pans, no lawnmowers, no hoses or garden rakes. Especially don't lend them your car. Unless you're like a lot of gringos, you have a good car and a beater. You can lend them the beater. They can't make it much worse. But as for lending out anything else, forget about it. Why? Because 99.9% of the time, it'll never come back in the same condition you gave it to him. Doesn't matter if the Latino guy or gal is your best friend. Oh, and it doesn't matter if what you lend him appears to be indestructible. Let's say a sledgehammer or a simple screwdriver or shovel. Even stuff that seems almost impossible to destroy or ruin. It'll come back muddy, scratched, bent, rusted, dented. I'm just warning you now. Oh, and if you do lend stuff out, there'll be times when you don't get it back unless you ask for it. And you might have to do that rather sternly. But then again, we've all got friends up in the States who are pretty much the same way, huh? It goes for relatives, too. Sometimes it's mostly relatives. Of course, this is not an indictment of the whole society or Latin culture. But compared to up in the first world, where you can normally at least count on whatever you've lent out being returned in decent condition. Well, I'm just giving you a notice. If you do that down here, just expect the worst. In fact, I know lots of gringas living down here who are or have been very generous with their clothes, makeup, and personal items. They'll lend this stuff to their Latina friends, and they all tell me, never again. Sure, there's that less than 1% of Latinas and Latinos that will return whatever you've lent them in pretty good condition, but I haven't met that particular person yet. Now, for sure, many years ago when I was living in Chicago, there were persons I would never lend stuff to either. God forbid I let them drive my car. But I also knew more than a few gringos who were really well organized. You walk into their garage and everything had its place. Guys with man caves that were spectacularly arranged and outfitted. Some guys, even guys who aren't gay, are like that, you know? A few years back, there was a name for guys like that, metrosexual. I don't think they use that term anymore. That's passé, but fastidious fits, huh? That might be the right word. Or maybe anal. But really, I haven't met any Latinos or Latinas that fit that description yet. Though I've met many, many who appear to be very fastidious when they're out in public, you know? Because when the Latinos go out, man, especially the ladies, they put on the dog. For some, it's like every night's the Oscars or a Hollywood premiere. Hey, nothing wrong with that. You gotta love it. But the real true test of a fastidious person is when you get to see what it's like within their home, their living space. And man, I gotta tell you, in the 30 plus years I've been down here, I've never been into a Latin American's home where everything was in its place, everything shipshape, where every faucet, light switch, and appliance actually worked or actually did what it was supposed to do. No scratches or dings in the walls, no light bulbs burnt out. Even though I know there are exceptions to the rule, I haven't met them yet. Even in the homes of very rich Latinos who've got multiple maids, there are things in the house that just aren't quite right. You know, rough around the edges. Smudged walls, could be grimy carpets, stains on nice furniture, dirty windows and bathrooms, undisciplined pets. I think you get it. Meanwhile, back in the States, we all know quite a few very fastidious Americans, don't we? When you visit their houses or get into their cars, everything's in order. Everything in the right place. And spick and span, too, and most of them don't have maids or cleaning ladies. Well, maybe a lady comes in once a week, but you know what I mean. Now, those are the people when you lend them something like a chainsaw, blender, or lawnmower. You know it's going to come back in great shape. In fact, there were two older neighbors I knew back in Chicago. One was an Italian guy, one was Norwegian, who you almost wanted to lend stuff to because it always came back in even better condition than when you lent it to him. By the way, up in Chicago, and in most of the upper Midwest, I'd say too, there's a peculiar habit that marks people from that region, especially in the middle and lower middle classes, the salt of the earth types. There's this language faux pas that my mother, The English professor would correct in people sometimes, and she didn't make any friends doing it. It has to do with the two words, lend and borrow. You see, there's this quirk. In the Midwest, many people will use the word borrow interchangeably with the word lend. They'll say, will you borrow me a hammer, or he borrowed me a hammer. Up in Chicago and parts north, you hear that all the time. And if you're from somewhere else in the country, you might be thinking this guy is short on linguistic skills because he's supposed to use the word lend or lent. But I've even heard Midwesterners with PhDs misuse the word borrow. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Don't ever borrow Latinos or Latinas anything. You might be sorry, so do so at your own risk. Unless you're the forgiving type, it may not end well. All right, shifting gears here. I realize all you guys and gals out there who want to move to Latin America, you're in various stages of your plan B, whatever. You've probably been watching a lot of expat YouTubes and reading expat blogs. You've been hearing and seeing lots of gringos and expats living down here talking about the things they don't like about Latin America, their complaints, and the mistakes they made when they got here. There's sort of a usual suspect standard complaint list you keep hearing over and over again. At the top of the list, that ever-present mañana time. Then down the list in no particular order comes the crappy roads. There's things that break and never get fixed. Terrible drivers, junk heaps on the road, drivers with no insurance, idiots on motorcycles, trucks and chicken buses blowing clouds of smoke, smelly, dirty taxis and Ubers with no AC, elevators and escalators that don't work, broken water faucets, tap water you can't drink. We've all heard that litany a thousand times, huh? But I bet you never heard this one before. Though if you ever build or remodel an apartment or a house, you'll understand why I'm bringing this up and why it really irks most gringos and expats, but not at first. So let's talk about it. All right, let me set this up here. Suppose you're looking to buy a condo, apartment, or house. You've gone through it, you've checked it out, you've got the money, you've got a lawyer to check out the paperwork, you like the neighborhood, you see it's pretty much the first world standards, it's brand new, squeaky clean, and being that everything's brand new and you're going to be the first one in, what's not to like? So you make the deal. Sure, there are little things here and there you're going to want to change, or maybe not if you actually contracted the house to be built yourself, had the plans drawn up by an architect and hired a builder, etc., and went through the plans with your builder and architect step by step. Then you should get exactly what you wanted, right? As long as you show up a lot, keep an eye on things while it's being built. This is Latin America, you know, so you have to do that. Here's the problem, and it's a very irritating problem that doesn't quite manifest itself till after you've lived in a place for a while. Sooner or later, you're going to realize that no matter how much you paid for that place, no matter what standard you're holding your builder to, no matter how great your builder was or how mediocre or low class he was, doesn't matter. They're going to use the crappiest quality paint available in the country. But you won't know that unless you're actually watching the guy paint and you're staring at the paint cans and looking at the brands. I mean, look, who realistically says to their builder, I want you to use Sherwin-William Classic Series Satin Paint Only, or Glidden, or Sears, whatever brand. I don't know of any gringo or expat down here building or remodeling a place who's ever had that discussion with their builder. They just look at a bunch of color tabs with their architect and pick mostly white, and that's it. There's almost no discussion of the paint brand. I mean, look, we all know enough about paints. There's good, better, and best. It's all about price. And in the States, even when you go to a place like Sherwin-Williams, they'll have three different lines, the good, better, and best. It's all about the money, though. As for paints, you really do get what you pay for. The more you pay, the better the coverage, the longer it lasts, the more stable it is, the easier and better the cleanup if it's been scratched or scuffed. Now, up in the States, if someone's using Sherwin-Williams, good, better, or best, you know, you're getting a pretty good product. Same with other brands, like Glidden or Benjamin Moore. And they're Sears, if Sears even exists anymore. The name brands will hold up. They have to. That's their mark of distinction. They've got a reputation, and they've stood the test of time. However, if you see a painter using a no-name brand, there's usually only one reason for that. The cost, because good paint is expensive, even twice as expensive as the no-name brand. Now, of course, up in the States, when contractors build big apartment buildings and such, they'll use the no-name brand. Who cares? It's all about just selling them and turning them over. Thing is, a new paint job always looks good. Doesn't matter if it's Benjamin Moore or El Cheapo. What you're paying for with the good stuff is longevity, too, and cleanability if it gets marked or scuffed. And that's hugely important here in Latin America, and no one ever thinks about it. Now, here in Latin America, when you go to a hardware or paint store, you'll see a dozen or so no-name brands, stuff you've never heard of before, like, for instance, Vulcan, Novex, Sol, etc., etc. And all those no-name brands come half as cheap as the mid-level Sherwin-Williams brand. Sherwin-Williams paint stores are in every Latin American country, you know, but they and some of the other high-end brands have less than 5% of the market. Now, way back a million years ago when I was going to university, I painted a few houses in the summer. I found out quickly there is a big difference in paint brands. As mentioned, Sherwin-Williams pretty good, but there is a brand called Benjamin Moore. Have you heard of it? Expensive, but top shelf. That stuff spreads like cream, and it truly does cover in one coat. Oh, but it's pricey, all right, and you only can find it in boutique paint stores. But man, I had a couple of customers who insisted on it. And at first I thought, why do they want to spend so much money on paint? What a waste, but it was their money. I found out though right away it was a pleasure to work with. Really did beat the pants off of Sherwin-Williams, which in itself is pretty good paint. But you have to remember, and most people don't consider this, here in Latin America, weather conditions are extreme. Yeah, it's true. Up in the States you have ice and cold, but down here the sun is absolute murder on a painted surface. In fact, on an outdoor painted surface in the sun, even an indoor painted surface when the sun's coming through a window, you can't put your hand on it for more than 3 seconds. It can be painfully hot. That's only one of the reasons why, after 6 months or a year, you could tell the quality of paint that's been used. Now, with the cheap stuff, the surface starts looking chalky when you rub your hand across it. A powdery film rubs off on your fingers easily. On top of that, there's adhesion problems. There will be places where it gets a lot of sun and rain where it'll start flaking, bubbling, or pulling away. The problem is, again, it won't show up right away. So what are you supposed to do? Well, if you buy decent paint like Sherwin-Williams or even the really high-priced stuff like Glidden or Benjamin Moore, you could spend the money and repaint the place. But that's generally not a good idea because you would be asking for even more trouble by reapplying quality good stuff on top of the low-budget, cheap, and crappy paint, which has less than great adherence. So you'd be putting good stuff on top of bad stuff that doesn't stick very well. So then what's the answer? What do you do? Well, I don't really know of a good answer because technically the way to solve that problem is to recondition the entire surface to accept the new, better paint. That's a huge job and almost never worth it. When there's one dead giveaway if they're using crappy paint, which they almost always do anyway. When a wall gets stained or scuffed or around a switch plate starts looking dirty and grungy from finger marks, if you take a damp rag with a little soap and water on it, as recommended on every paint can in that situation, after you've cleaned it and it dries, if it doesn't look much better or sometimes even worse, it's definitely cheapo paint. Worse yet, oftentimes when you try to clean it and it does dry, it appears as a slightly different color or shade than the original paint job. And the only way to get it to match is to open the old paint can and repaint it. Oh, and here's another thing about painters in Latin America. You've heard me say this many times before. They don't use tape, probably because it costs a couple bucks for masking tape. And they like to use a roller and it spatters everywhere. And drop cloths? Most have never heard of them. So when they leave, they think the job is done. Now you or someone has a major cleanup job. Latin painters are universally sloppy. And you'd think if you painted for a living, you'd do it right, professionally. Have some pride in your work. Worse yet, you know when a job's over, you've always got some paint left in the cans, right? Well, they rarely seal those cans properly, so a year or two later, when you want to do a touch-up, the paint's got a hard skin over it. It's ruined. Simply because they didn't take the extra minute or 30 seconds to seal it up well. By the way, I've got a good hack for keeping your paint alive in the can for a long, long time. Take a piece of Saran wrap, cover the can before you put the lid on, tap the lid down with a hammer, and here's the real trick. Turn the paint can upside down and store it that way. If you do that, the paint in your cans will last for years. However, if you're using oil-based paint, called in Spanish esmalte, E-S-M-A-L-T-E here in Latin America, E-S-M-A-L-T-E, don't store it by covering it with Saran wrap. Use tin foil. Because oil-based paint will eventually dissolve Saran wrap. Again, use tinfoil, otherwise known as aluminum foil. Which begs the question, why do some people call it tinfoil? Well, actually, there is an answer to that. Before World War II, it was actually made out of tin. And then, during World War II, they developed really cheap and easy ways to extract aluminum from bauxite because they needed to make warplanes out of aluminum. Then aluminum became cheaper than tin. That's why we have aluminum foil, or as the Brits say, aluminium foil. That means people who still say tin foil are just basically old. By the way, you know what they find in the brains of everyone who's got Alzheimer's? Aluminium deposits. Funny thing is, too, before World War II, Alzheimer's was considered a very rare disease. Not so today in the age of aluminium. Oh, and there were no aluminium pots and pans before World War II either. Have you checked your kitchen cabinets lately? And how about those ubiquitous deodorants, all of which have aluminum chlorhydrate in them? Go ahead, read the labels. So, as the bard might have said, to stink and risk losing friends, or not to stink and risk Alzheimer's, that is the question. Though I understand back in the bard's day, the pre-aluminium days, everyone kind of stunk. But I digress. Man, did I digress. By the way, there is a somewhat high-end competitor to Sherwin-Williams in Latin America. There's a company out of Mexico called Comex, C-O-M-E-X. It's a huge supplier of high-end paint found in most Latin American countries now. Just slightly less expensive than the middle-of-the-road Sherwin-Williams paint, which to me is the minimum quality you should be using here in Latin America, but you'll probably never get the chance to use it. Unless you're building from scratch or remodeling and you insist on it. Anyway, they've got this paint called Comex, which is really pretty good. But unfortunately, as with everything here in Latin America, it's details, details. I've used it myself. It adheres well. They've got all the colors you could ever want. And it mostly goes down in one coat, as claimed. But here's the problem, and it's happened to me more than once. A year or two will go by and you need some more of the same color. Tree fell down, scraped the side of your house, or you're adding a garage, whatever. In my case, I went down to the Comex store, hauled one of the old empty paint cans with me, had a coat on it for the color, etc. They mixed up a brand new 5-gallon bucket. When applied, it was not a match. Not even close. Even though they've got those special mixing machines that Sherwin-Williams and all the big brands have, where you just punch in the number and it's supposed to automatically mix in the proper tints to the base coat, etc. Well, after a number of tries, they just couldn't get it right. So it ended up being a lot bigger paint job than I thought because it had to match the adjacent wall, so the adjacent wall had to be repainted, even though it was in perfectly good condition. The moral of this story? You will end up living in a place that uses cheap and crappy paint. The only solution is, if you're remodeling or building new, you must insist on good paint, because builders and painters will not do it on their own. Go for a name brand like Sherwin-Williams, and though it might cost you an extra $200 to do your whole house, in the long run, it's definitely worth it. And think about the Comex brand. It's pretty good. It'll last, it'll go on well, and it's cheaper than Sherwin-Williams, which is what I'd always recommend. But skip Comex and go with Sherwin-Williams if you're going to do custom colors. However, if you're going with white, no problem. Comex can't screw that up. Plus, they've got their standard 5 or 6 basic colors, which they can't screw up either because they make those by the truckload. Now, as for those really high-end brands like Benjamin Moore and Glidden, you can't find them in every Latin country. Oh, and here's a tip I wish I'd have known ages ago. If you're painting metal, lots of metal down here, you'll have gates and garage doors, lean-to roofs, swing sets if you've got kids. You never want to paint metal with latex or acrylic paint, although you can in a couple of years, you'll regret it. It'll start rusting through for sure. Remember, down here, the rainy season is brutal. It's even worse if you live within a half a mile of a coastline. The salty air is brutal, too, on metal, especially. Though, oddly enough, cars aren't too much affected by the rainy season or the salty air. It's odd. You don't see them rotting out like we used to see cars rot out up in the states where they used to salt the roads. Probably because car bodies are mostly plastic these days. Though, that's not to say down here you don't see cars and chicken buses rotting out. A lot of them do, but it's almost always the older ones that are 20 years older or more. Now, rust has to have a place to start. It needs bare metal. So it needs an unpainted ding or a scratch. And as you probably know, Latin America is the land of dings and scratches. Enough said about that. Oh, and here's a story for you. The other day, I took an Uber. It was about a 6-year-old Honda Fit, F-I-T. Color? Black. And I noticed when I walked up to it, various dings and bangs that had been repainted. From a distance, it looked all right, but as you got closer, it looked terrible. There were spots that were glossy, some that were matte, all kinds of different wrinkles and finishes. And when I got in, I noticed on the floor in the back seat a $5 can of black spray paint. The driver told me every time he got a ding or a scratch, he'd just pull over and whip out the spray can.
Only in Latin America, huh?
And also up in the States in better trailer courts near you. Anyway, just remember, if you have metal anywhere outside or exposed to the elements, you have to use a good grade of oil-based paint. And people here in Latin America know that, except they almost never prepare the metal, you know, sand it down, so they're painting right on metal that almost always has some rust on it. Not good at all. But it's so common to watch people paint rusted metal. Once again, only in Latin America and select trailer courts near you. Now, the right way to paint metal, of course, is first sand it and get rid of all the rust, then lay down a primer coat and then a finish coat or two. However, it seems to be a universal pattern here in Latin America for people to just apply a gray or red primer coat and that's it. Sure, it's better than nothing, though not enough, but people will never learn. Anyway, there you have it, a few painting tips that should help you preserve the life of whatever you're painting. All right, now let's talk about driving through different border checkpoints here in Latin America. It's a question that comes up a lot because people have nice cars up in the States and they'd like to bring them down instead of selling them and then rebuying. Why do that when you have a really nice car up in the States that you know is in good condition and you've taken care of? Speaking of details, some Americans, if not most, really take care of their cars, and they know if they sell their car up in the States and rebuy a used one here in Latin America, there's no telling how the previous owner treated it. Now, of course, you might want to buy a new one down here, but most people don't do that. They buy used, at least at first. But then, are you buying other people's problems? You'll find out. Mindful of that, here's an email from someone who wants to ship their car part of the way down and drive it the rest of the way because they've got an additional problem of wanting to bring a dog from the States to their final destination, which is Guatemala. So, I'll read the pertinent parts of Mr. D's email. He says, Johnny, we are having a fun time figuring out how to get our dog to Guatemala. Most airlines are not offering pet services during the COVID thing. However, we found a cargo shipping company that can get our dog belongings and car to Panama. So we were considering just picking her up in Panama and driving her ourselves on through to Guatemala. I know it's a long-ass drive there and back, he says, but it's as much for the experience, too. Question is, Johnny, is it safe? Are gas and hotels available along the way? What do you think? Signed, Mr. D. Well, Mr. D, good question. I have to say, I've driven from Panama to Guatemala at least 3 or 4 times now. And back, too. The whole route is on the Pan-American Highway, which is totally safe, day and night. Though I wouldn't drive at night. Not because of what you might think, robberies, holdups, bad boys, and banditos. But because this is Latin America, and you know about the maintenance problem, right? That means the Pan-American Highway is in some stretches fantastically first world. Then, 20 minutes later, in other stretches, especially way out in the boonies, pretty rough with very poor lighting. You've got unmarked turns and detours, road construction just popping up out of nowhere, and terrible, sometimes maniacal, chicken bus and truck drivers who don't care at all about the laws will pass on curbs. They'll pass on double yellow lines, many of them overloaded and missing lights, too. And all that's bad enough during the day, but at night, forget about it. And as far as getting pulled over and stopped, I got stopped in every country I went through. They'll spot your foreign plates. Cops will always want to see your papers. They'll have a look in the back, check under the seats, maybe make you get out for a second or two. The best ploy there is to pretend you don't know any Spanish at all. Then they usually get frustrated pretty fast, shrug, and let you go. Now, sometimes the immigration cops at the border will make you open up your car doors. They'll take a few things out, a suitcase or two. They might even pull out the spare tire and look under it. But in all those 3 or 4 trips, which means I went through at least 15 different border crossings in that time, I never had a single problem at the border. Though I did have a hard time once in Nicaragua. Just about 10 minutes from the border, a cop pulled me over. I played the dumb gringo no español thing. But he wasn't buying it, and he made me take every single thing out of that car. And I was packed to the gills with construction tools and saws. So, there I was, out in the boonies, with all my junk piled up on the side of the road. Then he picked up one of those cheap 4-foot-long fluorescent lights I had in a box in the back of my car. And he motioned to me as if he wanted me to give it to him. And I said, go ahead and take it. I think it was only worth 20 or 30 bucks. He wanted a gift. And I also gave him a 2-liter bottle of Coke that I had in the back seat. He seemed more grateful for that than the light. The worst part was when it was over, he didn't even help me repack my car. So that was the only time in maybe 15 different border crossings I ever really got hassled. Though once I took a trip from Costa Rica, which is right next to Panama, we drove to Antigua, Guatemala. I rode along with a gringo construction boss who was based in Costa Rica, but was about to start a hotel construction project in Antigua, Guatemala. Now, to get to Guatemala from Panama, you had to go through Honduras, El Salvador, and Nicaragua. And we really had no trouble at all either, even at the borders. He had a lot of tools and equipment, but that came through easily because it was all obviously used. However, if that stuff would have been new or even too clean or packed too nicely in boxes, he'd had to pay some duty on the stuff, but he didn't. Anyway, 2 days later, when we finally arrived at our destination, the Clarion Suites in Antigua, Guatemala, his company had rented him a condo there. Anyway, when we finished unloading the tools and stuff, he took a screwdriver and popped off the door panel on the driver's side. He reached way down and pulled out a pistol he had hidden there. And I said, man, I'm glad you didn't tell me about that ahead of time. I don't think I'd have been too smooth going through those border checkpoints, knowing that. Then he explained he was from Texas and he always had a gun, and that you could only have a gun registered in one Latin country or any country at a time. It took weeks or even months to do that kind of paperwork. So he just did the next best thing, hid it in his car. And I thought, hey, he must know what he's doing, but I would never try it. Oh, and there was another redneck acquaintance of mine around that time who drove his pickup down from Texas all the way to Costa Rica. He had a bunch of guns welded into one of the tubes of the frame of his pickup truck. I watched him as he cut the end off the tube and pulled out the guns. His plan at the time really was foolproof. The tube was welded shut at both ends. No one would ever have known. Still a risk, of course. But then again, both these guys were from Texas. Now, I've always been a gun owner myself, though mine have always been legal. That's what I like about most countries in Latin America. As long as you have residency there, you can own guns. Though you should buy them down here. There are gun stores all over the place. Don't try to bring your own down because there'll be so much red tape and fees and taxes and delays that you'll regret it. Oh, and Mr. D, as far as hotels and gas stops, every big and medium-sized city you go through will have first-world franchise hotels, as well as brand-name gas stations like Texaco and Shell. And, of course, some really nice mom-and-pop hotels, too, but do make sure you always stay at a hotel with a gated, guarded parking lot. Of course, all the upscale and first-world hotel chains will have that.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.